Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Coming up on the Hockey News pregame show, London police provide an update on the Hockey Canada sexual assault scandal.
And another winter classic for the Blackhawks, this time Connor Bedard in a toque.
And joining us from Philadelphia, we got our Flyers site editor, Siobhan Nolan.
I'm Ryan Kennedy.
I'm Michael Trakos, and this is the Hockey News pregame show, brought to you by BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. Hey, hockey fans, welcome to the Hockey News pregame show. I'm Michael Trakos. With me, as always, is Ryan Kennedy. And Ryan, we got some serious news to dig into here.
Yep.
You know, finally, this Hockey Canada World Junior Championship Team sexual assault case is finally going to the courts. On Monday, players Cal Foote, Michael McLeod, Carter Hart, Dylan Dubé, Alex Formington were formally charged. They weren't there, but lawyers for the five members of Hockey Canada's team were in court. And interesting bit of news coming out of this, Michael McLeod was also charged with a second count of sexual assault for being a party to the offense in relation to aiding someone else in committing an offense. Now, a lot of what happened yesterday was very brief. I think it was only 15 minutes of court time. There's going to be another hearing scheduled for April 30th. But, you know, main takeaways for me, London police chief formally apologized to the victim. And in sort of a strange move, he did a bit of finger pointing, not just at the London police, but also at the media, kind of blaming video games, magazine covers, music videos for the sexualization of violence. What did you take from yesterday's hearing?
Yeah, it was pretty bizarre. And I think a lot of sort of, you know, covering his bases and probably trying to put, he did apologize, but it's overall, this is all a pretty bad look for the London police that it took so long for them to get things together. And, you know, the fact that an investigation kind of stopped and started, and they say it's been one investigation, but the officers that were involved initially in 2018 are no longer involved. So it's like, is it really the same? Or is this just kind of, you know, making sure that you're not looking bad in this scenario now that it's blown up to this huge national interest story and scandal? The whole thing about, you know, media and video games is bizarre. I mean, this is something, video games in particular, people have been saying this for years now, but
whenever there's like a school shooting or a mass shooting,
yeah,
it always gets linked to, okay, well, Grand Theft Auto as a video game is partially to blame, or,
yeah,
you know, music videos relating to like hip-hop artists are somehow to blame.
Yeah, and I can guarantee, like, there have been horrific criminals in the past before video games and hip-hop videos. So it just doesn't wash with me. That to me is a weird scapegoat. I think that the microscope is really going to be on the London police from here on out. It's going to be a roller coaster of a news cycle for sure, because you have, you know, the most beloved sport in Canada being sort of combed over, and the culture in hockey, and, you know, what allegedly took place here. So, I mean, it's going to be messy. I think, you know, for the London police, there's going to be continued controversy. And much like there was a reckoning at Hockey Canada at the executive level when this first came to light, I wouldn't be surprised if we see something similar with the London police and how they've handled it so far.
That's a really good point, because there are a lot of questions. Like, they took questions for a lot longer than the actual hearing took place. And yet, every question was met with we can't get into that, or we can't tell you these details. But here's what we know is, like, in 2018, this victim came forward with, you know, sexual assault allegations. Ultimately, they were dismissed until this case was reopened. And what are we? We're in 2024 right now.
6 years.
Six long years. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think a reckoning is probably going to take place. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to the April 30th hearing where we hopefully get a little bit more details on this case.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, with a high-profile case like this, everybody wants clarity. Mm-hmm. And like I say, it's going to be something that's going to be talked about a lot throughout Canada. I'm sure internationally it'll get picked up as well, because obviously Canada and hockey are so closely related. But this is going to be one of the biggest cases we've probably ever seen in this country.
Now, obviously, when we're talking about this, there is the presumption of innocence for all the players involved. Mm-hmm. And further to that, the NHL, well, we found out yesterday that there is going to be cap relief for the team. So, you know, looking at this from a hockey perspective, if you are the Philadelphia Flyers and you're going to be without Carter Hart for an indefinite time now, this provides an opportunity to go out and maybe get another goaltending in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, it is very interesting, because you have teams here, you know, particularly, you know, the Flyers are a playoff team right now. You know, New Jersey losing two players in McLeod and Cal Foot, although kind of one and a half, because Cal Foot tends to be kind of a AHL-NHL tweener. But, you know, I mean, New Jersey, and we're going to talk about them later in the show, obviously want to get back in the playoff race once they get healthier. If you're the Flyers, you know, Samuel Ersson's been playing well, but, you know, depth, you know, it's crucial down the stretch, because we've talked about that Metro Division and how jam-packed it is and how many good teams are there. So if you can get the cap relief and you can get somebody that at least can be, you know, like a battery mate for Samuel Ersson, I will say, too, it will be interesting to see what Philadelphia does before the deadline this year, because they're ahead of schedule right now. Like, we didn't expect the Flyers to be this good. I mean, all credit to the players and to Coach John Tortorella. But if GM Daniel Briere looks at the long-term picture of this franchise, with or without Carter Hart, and says, okay, well, we can make the playoffs, but we're probably not a contender yet, is it better to get future assets and continue to build, you know, for next season and the season after that? Maybe they don't grab a goalie. Maybe they just stand pat and say, you know what, we don't want to give up assets in the short term. We are a long-term success, you know, story.
Question for you. Knowing that you might not even want a player back, would that change your mind on, you know, maybe getting a goaltender with term? And, you know, the goalies are out there that we keep hearing, Kaapo Kähkönen, Elvis Merzlikins, Jake Allen. Would one of those guys maybe not just suffice for the end of the season, but maybe even next year and beyond?
I mean, that's a great point, because, you know, something I was thinking about is, with all of the players that have been charged, all of them are RFAs this summer, other than Fermentin, who was... he was unsigned, you know.
He's
by
playing
the
in the Swiss League, or
he was playing in the Swiss League. Yeah, so he was like non-roster list, and I don't want to get too much into the weeds of the CBA and things like that. But I am kind of curious. Like, do these players get qualified? I mean, we're not going to have a resolution by the summer, unless somebody changes their plea. Right now, they've all pled not guilty, but it. You know, if you're the GM, and from my understanding, the non-roster list, you can be on there for a long time. So do they just kind of punt and say, okay, well, you know, this trial and these legal proceedings might take a couple of years, but we don't want to give up these players' rights? Or do they say, you know what, we're just going to wash our hands of it and let them become unrestricted after the draft in the summer?
Yeah, for a lot of them, the fact that they're just even being charged is almost kind of tainting a reputation or whatever. I know we have to let the legal process
play out
and everything, but, you know, the season still goes on. Unfortunately, it's, you know, there is a business at hand for this. So, yeah, I'm kind of curious. Obviously, with, you know, a guy like McLeod and Foote, it's not as dire when you lose both guys from the roster. Like you mentioned, Cal Foote is a bit of a seventh defenseman at that, and even a McLeod is a bottom six forward. But you know, Carter Hart is probably the biggest profile name here in the sense that, you know, the Flyers, you know, are a dramatically different team with him in the lineup versus out.
Yeah, I mean, a starting goaltender, right? Yeah. I mean, that's like a guy that you expect to play, you know, probably about 60 games, you know, maybe 55 if you're doing load management and things
especially
like that.
Especially with how he was playing.
Exactly. So, obviously, a tough situation for the Flyers in terms of hockey personnel, notwithstanding everything else that goes along with, you know, the legal proceedings, as you mentioned before. And we got a bunch of little fun topics here.
Thank
in
you.
This
I
segment.
Put them together.
I know. You did a great job. Let's start off with some breaking news. The next Winter Classic next year, Chicago, Wrigley Field, the Hawks, and we're hearing the St. Louis Blues as the opponent. I don't know if that's been officially confirmed yet, but Connor Bedard getting his first outdoor game in what will be his second season. Chicago has played outdoors a lot.
Yeah.
I was kind of joking that I don't know what they'll do for a uniform because they've basically cycled through every historical jersey they've ever had. But it'll be fun to see what they come up with. But how do we feel about this?
I think it makes sense. I get the argument that, again, with Chicago, but looks like we were going through it. I think Toronto's had four outdoor games. Pittsburgh's basically in it every year. Washington.
Boston.
Boston. Like, what do these teams have in common? They're big hockey markets. Like, yeah. Their fans stretch on or stretch out beyond the city limits. So, you know, of course Connor Bedard deserves an outdoor game. He's going to be one of the most exciting young players. And then you factor in, like, who else maybe is going to be on that roster? Is it going to be a Macklin Celebrini there,
right,
too? So, St. Louis makes sense as a natural rival. I was in St. Louis for when they were in the Cup Final in 2019, got to see the Cubs and the Cards play. What a great rivalry that was. So, I think this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I can't knock it because, yeah, I mean, it's a very good point, you know, especially for American TV ratings. Chicago, original six franchise, big media market, you know, big TV market. It just makes sense. You know, even casual fans of sports know Chicago as an NHL team.
Would you have rather seen, though, Bedard versus Crosby?
Whoa.
Like a Pittsburgh-Chicago would have been, I think, just outstanding.
That would be pretty fun, too. Yeah, yeah. I would say, like, it makes sense for St. Louis because it's, like, as you said, natural rivalry. Also, same time zone, which, right, I don't know. It's a minor thing because it's only an hour. And you do want to sort of spread the love around a little bit because, as you mentioned, Pittsburgh has had a ton. I know St. Louis has gone outdoors at least once before because they played Minnesota.
Columbus would have been another nice one. Just
that
because you got Fantilli there.
Ooh, yes.
A Fantilli-Bedard. I know Columbus is having a tough go this year, but
yeah.
I imagine with all the young guys they have, next year is going to be a little better.
Yeah, I guess if I was going to be cynical, you know, TV exec, I would be like, Columbus? Like, people might not even know it's Ohio. They might think it's like the Georgia one.
Ooh.
Yeah. I would not say that, but cynical TV execs would. Let's move on. Jack Hughes, another big superstar in the young man variety. Set to return this week. New Jersey's in a tough spot in the Metro.
Yeah.
And injuries have played a big part of it. Do they need a trade, or do you see what they can do with Hughes back in the lineup?
Okay, I think they can get in the playoffs with Hughes back in the lineup and just where they are in the standings. Like, they're kind of huddled with, like, four or five different teams. And I think Jersey, we talked about this weeks before, I think they are a playoff team. However, I would go all in because are they good enough to get past, you know, the Rangers or the Hurricanes or whoever else comes out of that Metro? And the answer probably is, as it's constructed, no. I was surprised that Jersey was able to get past the Rangers last year.
Yeah.
The way that the Devils have been going is obviously health is an issue. I would beef up and get either, you know, some help on defense so that a guy like Nemec isn't playing. I think he was playing like over 20 minutes the other night.
Yeah.
That's too much for how young he is. And same with like a guy like Luke Hughes. I think we're all kind of enticed by like, oh, wow, those two young guys on defense is going to be great. I don't think it's great right now.
Right.
I think
they're not supposed to be playing that much right now. And if Dougie Hamilton hadn't got hurt, we probably wouldn't have even seen Simone Niemic this
Good
year.
Point.
Like, that was not the plan. It just so happens that he's stepped up and played very well for them. It's a very interesting point because, you know, when I look at the Devils, they do have a lot of good young players, Hughes and Niemic being at the forefront there. Alex Holtz has been putting up some points, so it feels like he's finally sort of like got traction as an NHLer. So I do feel like this is the team that they could give up some draft picks and be okay. So if they wanted that final piece of the puzzle to at least, you know, be competitive this year, try to go to the next level, because they did, as we mentioned, win one round last year. I could see that. So, yeah, I'm feeling that.
Are they a playoff team, though, for you?
They're a playoff team for me, yeah. With Jack Hughes back in the line. When they're healthy, they should be a playoff team. I would love to see a little of an uptick in net, but that might have to wait for the summer.
Yeah.
But I think they're a playoff team for sure. One team that has definitely put themselves in the playoff picture is the Edmonton Oilers, who tonight, big test. Vegas could end the streak. But we're not going to get into that. Instead, Vancouver coach Rick Tocchet, who was part of the Pittsburgh Penguins when they set the record for consecutive wins, he hopes the Oilers don't break the streak. You think he might be bitter because he doesn't want them catching the Canucks.
If I'm the Canucks and I'm looking in the rearview mirror, the Edmonton Oilers are closer than they appear.
Fair.
Like, they are, you know, I think Vancouver's in danger of losing that number one seed to Edmonton or maybe even to Vegas.
Right.
Nothing's a given. Obviously, you know, Vancouver getting Lindholm changes a lot.
Yeah.
I think they're the best team. Well, I don't even want to say that. I was going to say they're the best team in the Pacific, but I still think Vegas is ahead of them. I don't know how you're feeling, but you know, the Edmonton Oilers are obviously the hottest team in the NHL. Tocchet doesn't want to lose the record. Obviously, he was part of that Penguins team, but yeah, I think more so, he's afraid that, you know, if the way that Edmonton Oilers are going, very soon Vancouver's going to get chased.
Yeah, I think the legit fear here is that, and you've mentioned this before, if you're the number one seed, that means you don't have to play 2 versus 3 in that first round. So Vegas versus Edmonton, you are basically having a Stanley Cup contender eliminated in the first round. And we've seen this in other divisions in the past, particularly in the Atlantic. But if I'm Vancouver, I certainly want first because it means I avoid Vegas and Edmonton in the first round. And then after that, hey, you know, all bets are off because, you know, when it's only 8 teams left, it's all good teams. Anything can happen. Injuries, war of attrition, all that stuff.
Would you say the number one seed is more important in the West than the East just because of who the wild card team might be also?
Yeah, I would say so because if you're looking at the wild card in the East, it could be Tampa Bay.
Could even be Toronto.
Could be Toronto. It could be Pittsburgh and Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
Whereas...
Could be the Devils.
Yeah, it could be the Devils. Whereas in the West, it feels like the teams... Like, it could be Nashville. And it's, like, nothing against Nashville, but I feel like that's a team that hasn't made a run in quite a while and maybe doesn't have the horses to do so. So you're getting teams that might be a little more flawed overall in the West. So I would definitely agree on that. I'm going to finish up this segment still with the Metro Division. Alex Ovechkin, 9 goals in the first half.
Isn't that outstanding? Like, 9 goals for Ovechkin.
That's wild. Does he score 30 this year?
Now that he's only got 9, I don't think he does.
It's tough. And, you know, I was talking to some Washington reporters at the All-Star game, and they were saying, like, at this point in his career, he can't use his frame the way he used to. Maybe in the offseason, he needs to think about how much bulk he's carrying. Does he need to be a little more lean just to get more out of that frame? And, you know, he's not generating the same power he used to, and it's showing up, obviously, in his goal-scoring acumen. So
yeah, people forget how big Ovechkin is. Like, I was looking at his stats. I think he, at a playing weight, I think he's bigger than Eric Lindros was when he was playing.
Which is pretty wild because Eric Lindros was obviously...
It's something like 6'3", 240 or something.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. You know, Ovechkin, you know, when he is at his best, he uses that size to the fullest. Like, you know, in that Stanley Cup final where they went over Vegas, he was literally just running guys over.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. If he's going to score 30 goals, he's got to be more of a finesse guy.
Fair enough. And just to finish off on that point, if Ovechkin is regressing like this, you're wondering about Sidney Crosby and the Olympics in 2026.
Yeah, we all think it's a slam dunk, but, you know, where was Ovechkin last year? He was in the hunt for Rocket Richard. Where is he this year?
Off a cliff.
Off a cliff. Like, he wouldn't have made the All-Star team the way he's playing this year.
Yeah.
So Crosby right now, I think he was, like, top 25 in scoring, and we're thinking, oh, this guy can play until he's 50 the way he's doing it.
Yeah.
But who knows? Like, it doesn't take much. Like, you look at Patrick Kane, like, again, a guy that we thought, hey, he's going to make a huge impact. All of a sudden, you get older real quick in this league.
Very true. I will say this for Crosby, though. He's always been an outstanding two-way player, so he could be a fourth liner on Team Canada and still have a lot of value, even just as a penalty killer, a shutdown guy, face-off specialist.
And he's a physical specimen.
We're
going live to Philadelphia, where we've got Flyers site editor and reporter Siobhan Nolan. How are you doing today, Siobhan?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing all right, and the Philadelphia Flyers have been the surprise team, I would say, of the entire first half. And, you know, going into the second half, we'll see if that holds, but, you know, they've lost five in a row. They're holding on to that third place in the Metro. What is your feeling as we go into the second half of the season, Siobhan, as to whether the Flyers are still going to be a, you know, playoff threat?
They've definitely had a very chaotic January alone. And I think you could definitely see the mental exhaustion was there with Owen Tippett's lower body injury, which thankfully he looks to be coming back from soon, if not tonight against Florida. Obviously, the Carter Hart stuff with him taking the indefinite leave and all of the Hockey Canada stuff going on, you know, he's been a part of the team for such a long time that you have to imagine that that's really affected the locker room and probably has just sent everyone into a tailspin. But I think the break was much needed. And I think from the looks of it, they're coming back from it with a really positive outlook. They still really want that playoff spot and they're still very determined to get it. The team chemistry is still there and that's very important. So they haven't put themselves in a great position with the five-game losing streak, but I definitely still think that they're one to look out for in the second half.
Yeah. And Siobhan, when we look at this Flyers squad, you know, trade deadline is coming up and it feels like there's a definite plan here that even if they're playing really well, they still might end up being sellers. Sean Walker is a name that has come up as a player that a lot of other teams would love to have in their lineup. What are you hearing about, you know, potential plans in Philly?
You know, the Flyers front office likes to keep it very close to the vest. We don't get a lot of specifics out of them, but from what I've heard with Danny Briere, what he's told the media, they have a very specific plan in mind for what they want the team to look like, what they want the team culture to be like. And from what I've gathered, that's very focused on the future and investing in the young players. They have a great young core with Cam York and Joel Farabee and now Jamie Drysdale and a bunch of those players. So it's definitely looking like if they do end up selling by the trade deadline, which I think that they will, you'll probably be seeing more of the older, more experienced guys be on the way out, even if they haven't been there for that long, like Sean Walker, because they're very focused on the future and investing in what Briere called sustained success. They want to build a team that's going to stay together for the long haul and really just be able to bring multiple playoff runs and multiple, hopefully, fingers crossed, Stanley Cup wins to Philadelphia. So that seems to be where the focus is for them.
One of those young players, obviously, Jamie Drysdale, comes over from Anaheim in the Cutter Gauthier trade. What have you made of his impact so far? And, you know, is he the kind of real deal when we're talking about a Flyers core?
I definitely think he is the real deal. It's helped that he already was friends with some of the young guys on the Flyers, particularly Cam York. They're very, very close. So I think that helped him a lot. He's adjusting really well, considering the fact that the Flyers play a completely different defensive style than the Ducks do. And he was thrown right onto the power play and the, you know, first defensive pairing line. So just considering how much of a whirlwind it's been for him, he said himself in his introductory press conference that it felt like his head was in a blender. So to be 21 years old and to just adjust as well as he has in such a short amount of time, I see him being the real deal. I see him only making more of an impact as time goes on. I'd love to see more of him and Cam York playing together, which Tortorella alluded to we could possibly be seeing, which is exciting. So I'm really excited to see where Drysdale goes in the future, because I think he has a really bright future in Philly.
Nice. And speaking of bright futures, Owen Tippett signed a long-term extension recently. This is a very fascinating player for me because, you know, obviously he was a Toronto product and, you know, played in the OHL around here. And he always had those incredible physical tools, always a great goal scorer, great skater, but there was parts of his game he obviously needed to round out before he could be a legit NHLer. And it feels like he's found his place in Philly. And I'm also curious, you know, just how John Tortorella views him, because, you know, defense was never a Tippett strong suit, but obviously he's played well enough to get the Torts seal of approval. Is that fair to say?
I definitely think it is. And, you know, Owen Tippett said Philadelphia is home for him now. It's where him and his family feel very comfortable. It's just where he really feels like he belongs, which is great to see just off the ice that he feels like he's integrated well into the city. But John Tortorella is very insistent on having players focus on the weaknesses of their games, for lack of a better word. You know, with Jamie Drysdale, for example, obviously the kid plays great defense, but Torts was like, we know he can defend. I want him to be a better on offense. I want him to be like a rover on the ice. So he's very focused on improving where players aren't as strong and just making them as well-rounded as possible. And Owen Tippett has responded extremely well to that and very deserving of that 8-year, I think $49 million contract it was. So he's definitely responded well to being pushed by Torts. And I think that his game is rounding out very nicely. And again, he's another player that I'm very excited to see have such a sustained future in Philly.
Yeah, not many guys that size can move as well as Owen Tippett, just a speedster. Let's talk about Carter Hart. Obviously, we're going to let things play out in the courts, but it looks like he's not going to be available to the Flyers for the rest of the season. And if that is the case, you know, what does this loss mean? Because, you know, Carter Hart was very much seen as, you know, even a potential Team Canada goalie. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's a number one goalie in Philadelphia. And, you know, a lot of that success in the first half is could be attributed to how he played in net. So, you know, what does the Flyers' goaltending situation look like if Carter Hart's not going to be in net?
It's a significant loss. Carter Hart has been billed as the franchise goalie since he first signed his professional contract. And he was very much billed as this, you know, great community guy. He had that really wholesome relationship with a young fan from Everett, and that's why he wears number 79. So he had all of the makings to be the face of the franchise, and that's what they wanted him to be. He was a great locker room guy. You know, all the guys on the team loved, respected him, and were very close. He's been on the team for a very long time. I mean, he was one of the longest serving players. So it's a huge loss in the locker room and on the ice, because I think Sam Ersson's been incredible this season. And I think for a rookie young goalie, he has stepped up immensely, and I want to give him his flowers for that. But to not have Carter Hart's experience and guidance kind of helping him out, because they did help each other out a lot when they were kind of alternating every couple of games. So it is a big loss, and I think that they will figure it out. I am not worried about how they'll respond to it, but it's definitely a very sudden, very significant loss for them, because Carter Hart was a name that we were talking about every single week when the Flyers played. So it's going to be difficult and it's going to take a minute to adjust, but I think that they'll be able to figure things out.
All right. Listen, it's going to be an interesting month ahead for the Flyers as we inch closer to this trade deadline. You're going to follow Siobhan Nolan's coverage in the hockeynews.com, the Philadelphia Flyers team site. Thanks again, Siobhan, for joining us. And after the break, we've got more of the Hockey News pregame show. Stick with us.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. And Mike, we're going to keep going on that trade deadline theme, and there's still some time, but teams are going to have to make some decisions. So, buy, sell, stand pat. That is the name of the game here. We're going to go over some teams that have some decisions to make, and we will start off with the Pittsburgh Penguins. If you were GM Kyle Dubas, would you buy, would you sell, or would you stand pat before the deadline?
I'm going to stand pat, and I know that there's been a lot of talk about Jake Guentzel. He was at one time linked to the Vancouver Canucks. Mm-hmm. I think getting Elias Lindholm probably changes that strategy. I don't think they're going to be selling. I think Pittsburgh still intends to make the playoffs. I just don't think they can, sell the farm to get there. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, if you have to lose Guentzel in the offseason as a free agent, I think having a own rental, as they call them, is still worthwhile.
Interesting. I'm going to go contrary to what I've been saying for years now. I'm going to say they should buy.
What?
Because at this point, it's like if you're still under the illusion that you are a contender, which Pittsburgh apparently thinks they are, why, you might as well go for it, right? Like, I am loathe to see them give up more picks and prospects because that's all we've seen in the past decade. But at this point, like, you got Erik Karlsson. You're kind of in the mix. You're not quite there. If you're not going to sell Jake Guentzel or if you don't think you're going to get a good enough price for him, then it's like, whatever. You might fail, but then at least you really have to look at yourself in the summer and say, okay, for real, we are not a playoff team anymore.
Yeah.
We have to strip things down even further than we have. So this is sort of my way of saying it's like, I don't think it's the right thing to do, but they've already gone so far down this road that they might as well. So.
Well, Kyle Dubas's reputation is a guy who doesn't like rental players. He likes guys with term on contract. Uh-huh. So I could see them, further to what you said, like buying, but buying a guy where you've got him for multiple years.
Right. And hopefully it's a younger guy because that's what they need. All right, a team in a very similar spot, the Washington Capitals. We already talked about Ovi earlier in the podcast or on the pregame show. Buy, sell, or stand pat if you're Washington.
This is a big sell in my mind. Mm-hmm. You're already now without Evgeny Kuznetsov, who's on a personal leave. Mm-hmm. You've got Anthony Mantha, Max Pacioretty, Nicholas Obey-Kubel. Don't ask me to pronounce that one again. And Joel Edmondson, all pending UFAs. There's going to be a lot of market there for these guys. I think Mantha's a perfect power forward. Pacioretty, when healthy, when has that been?
Yeah.
He is still a very serviceable player. And Joel Edmondson, I think, is a perfect guy for the playoff run.
Yeah, I would agree with you on Edmondson in particular. I think they should sell. And it's funny because if you look at Washington and Pittsburgh in the standings, they're basically the same team right now. But it feels different.
Oh, yeah.
You know? It doesn't feel like Washington really has the juice to make it all the way to the finish line. And I think that, this is a Caps team that when they have picks, they draft well. So I'd like to see Ross Mahoney and his scouting crew have more picks this summer, and Edmondson would get you a pick or two. Even Obey-Kubel, if he's just kind of a 13th forward or even a fourth liner for a contender, I think there might be a little bit of value there. Not a first rounder, of course.
He was sort of an important piece to Colorado's championship a couple years ago.
There you go. So even if you could get like a third rounder for Obeku Bell, you know, it's an extra pick and maybe you do something good with it.
Yeah.
Sticking in the Eastern Conference, the Toronto Maple Leafs, buy, sell, stand pat. This is a team that there's no guarantees right now that they are going to make the, well, they're a wild card team, but what do you think? Buy, sell, stand pat.
I'm going to say buy. You know, the way that Toronto Maple Leafs are constructed right now, I think they are, you know, prime for a first round exit. That could change if you get a defenseman. So, you know, they've been linked to Chris Tanev. They've been linked to Noah Hanifin.
Yep.
Linked to basically anyone who can be an upgrade over what they have on their bottom six there on defense. So, yeah, I'm going to say bye because, you know, when you've got Matthews, Nylander, Marner, and Tavares, you've got the makings of some really dynamic offensive players who can be game changers in the playoff. But you don't have the defense, you don't have the goaltending to get you there. So, you know, trade deadline, that's where you can really shore things up.
Right. I feel like saying stand pat, but I do think a slight buy makes the most sense. The only reason I would say stand pat is, you know, a couple of the guys that they got in the summer, I feel will be more effective in the playoffs, like a Max Domi, who has been very good in the postseason recently for other teams. And even, dare I say it, Ryan Reeves, even if he's only playing a few minutes a night, think about if Toronto draws Florida in the first round.
Right.
You're going to want Ryan Reeves either as the policeman or just to sow chaos himself and keep the Panthers on their toes, because we know that that's a very physical team over there in Florida and Toronto's going to have to punch back. Maybe punching first is the way to do it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right. Sticking in that Atlantic Division, the Buffalo Sabres. Buy, sell, stand pat.
I'm going to go sell. The way they're looking right now, they're not completely out of it by points. There's just so many teams to leapfrog.
Yeah.
And again, they've got a lot of guys who are coming up on their contract. You know, Casey Mittelstadt, there's been a lot written about him by our team site. He's coming up on RFA status. I think based on the season he's having, it's almost like a sell high for him. Another guy, their captain, Kalaposo, is a UFA. Zemgus Girgensson is a UFA. Victor Olofsson, good power play option, is also a UFA. So, you know, the way that Buffalo is going, you know, just get more picks and prospects if you can, because this team is not a playoff team as constructed.
Yeah, I'm going to say sort of slight sell because I think Olofsson, he doesn't really have a spot on the Sabres anymore with so many good young forwards coming up. Like, he's kind of expendable, and I feel like they knew that coming into the season.
Sure.
This summer, they got to get another goaltender, or they have to figure out something. You know what? They just need another goaltender.
Do you think so? Like,
Ukko Pekalua? Yeah.
He's looking like an actual good goaltender this year, and then you throw Devon Levi, who I know he's been not Devon Levi this year, but, you know, another year. Don't you think that could be a tandem?
I would love to see them get a short-term solution, a veteran solution to go with UPL so that Devon Levi can play more games in the AHL next year, keep getting reps, because that's what you should do with young goaltenders. The whole season started off rough for Buffalo because they didn't have a solid veteran goaltender that could spell off Devon Levi and UPL. So that's my thought there.
All right.
All right. Seattle, this will be the last one. The Kraken, buy, sell, stand pat.
I'm going to say stand pat. I think Seattle, where they are right now, they're still in the playoff mix. I don't think they need to buy players to get into the playoffs. And then when you look at what they could sell, like a Jordan Eberle, maybe an Alex Wenberg, maybe a Thomas Tatar, I don't know how much you're going to get for these guys anyway. I think leave them as is. Maybe you'll surprise some teams like you did last year when they beat Colorado.
I'm going to say sell because I don't think they're going to surprise a team again this year. They're going to see them coming. And if you can get some assets, keep in mind, as well and as often as the Kraken have drafted, they've only drafted three times in their existence. So they still need critical mass there. I'd like to see them sell a couple of forwards and bring up a guy like Shane Wright in the second half. Or just even after the deadline, for that matter, just to see what he can do, because he's been great at Coachella Valley. I mean, the Firebirds have a couple of good young players that they could bring up and get reps. I don't think Seattle is a threat, and it would be nice to make the playoffs, but I feel that that's not necessarily the main focus. So we'll stop there, and we will have more questions. It is rapid fire time.
Our favorite time of the episode. Producer Connor, let's hit us up with some questions here.
We don't got questions.
Uh-oh.
This is, was he an NHLer?
We got a quiz.
We're bringing it back.
All right.
Let's do it.
This one, the Grammys were this weekend, so I've made it music themed.
Ooh.
These are either an artist or an NHLer.
All right.
And I made it even easier because both of these players, and I'll let you in on it.
Okay.
They've played over 500 games.
Okay. That's substantial.
Yes.
Nice.
All right. First name, Paul David Hewson.
Hewson?
Yes.
Paul David Hewson.
I'm going to go musician on that one. I don't have any rhyme or reason for it. I just... feel like 500 games is a lot.
I'm going to go, not an NHLer.
You're going to go musician. Yeah.
You are both correct. That is Bono, the lead singer of U2. That is his name.
Learned something today.
Yeah, there you go. Currently performing at the Sphere where the NHL draft is supposedly going to be.
That's right.
Next one, Wayne Cashman.
That's a hockey player.
That is definitely
for sure.
A hockey
Boston
player.
Bruins? Yep. Yeah.
You are correct. 1,000 games, 277 goals, 516 assists, 793 points. He had a career plus minus of 278.
Dang.
Which is insane.
I think he played for Don Cherry.
He did. Yeah.
There you go. And I believe.
Also a musician. Anytime Don Cherry is trending on Twitter, half the time it's about the saxophone player from like however many years ago.
Huh.
Just throwing that out there.
All right.
I thought you meant a musician from his like Rock'em Sock'em videos where he was singing.
Like,
that's
not.
That doesn't count.
Does not count.
All right. Next one. William Broad.
William Broad.
I'm going to say musician.
I'm going to go musician, too.
You are both correct.
This is too easy, Connor.
That is Billy Idol.
Good.
So
I heard Rebel Yell this morning.
There you go. Yeah. Next one. Greg Shepherd.
I say NHLer.
I'm going to go NHLer, too, because I feel like he played in the 80s. He
played in, like, Sudbury.
Maybe.
He also played for the Boston Bruins.
There you go.
Same team as William Cashman. 657 games, 205 goals, 293 assists for 498 points. Two away from 500 in his career. Had a career plus minus, again, of 129, which is insane.
Playing with Bobby Orr tends to do that.
Yeah,
and
played
Phil
for
Esposito.
Boston and Pittsburgh. Never won a Stanley Cup, though. I liked the name of where he was born. North Battleford, Saskatchewan.
Well, that's a good one. There's a couple of players that have come from North Battleford.
It's a great name. Yes. Great name. Final one, Gordon Sumner.
Oh, that's Sting, isn't it?
That's Sting. Yeah.
That is Sting, yes. It was.
I love how Connor's like, his hard ones that's going to trip us up are like
I told you
a
it was
guy
gonna
from
be
the
easy.
80s.
I was going to say, we're not boomers, but we're like, our parents are boomers, and therefore their culture has been foisted upon us.
Like, you could have went with like some like obscure band.
I wanted
You've gone
to
with
it.
U2, Billy Idol, and The Police.
Hey, you didn't know who U2 was.
That's true. We didn't know Bono.
I knew he wasn't a hockey player.
There you go.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Right. I shouldn't have told you how many games they played. That was
So is that
mistake.
It for the rapid fire?
That's it for rapid
so
fire.
Both Ryan and I 5 for 5?
5 for 5.
I feel like you have to do like 5 push-ups or something.
There you go.
Of that.
No chance.
We didn't put anything on
it's like all-star game accuracy shooting there.
There
just killing
go.
It.
Well, that was a fun episode. I like that one, Connor. You got to bring that one back.
Good job.
Listen, for Ryan Kennedy, I'm Michael Tracos. That's Connor Somerville behind the decks there. This was the Hockey News pregame show. We're going to thank NorthlandHockey.com and BetMGM. And we'll see you next time at the rink.